Coffee Break, where Helena comes to talk.
Welcome in. This is Coffee Break. I'm Troy Shockley. Thanks for making us a part of your morning schedule. I do appreciate that. And kicking off the show today, we've got St. Peter's Health here in the studio. And I do want to mention, stick around after the show. I'm actually going to be chatting a little bit later with Tom Schultz over on Voices of Montana. We're going to be talking about some of our past Halloween specials. Take a look at what we've got coming up this year. It's going to be fun. That's coming up on Voices of Montana. You can hear that on the AM KCAP. It's 9:50 AM. Starts right after our show this morning. I think I'm going to be linking up with Tom about 9:30 or so. But that's later. This is now. And now, as I said, we've got St. Pete's in the studio. Well, not all of it. We've got a couple of the cogs over there at St. Pete's. Starting us off, Dr. John Griffin. John, thanks for coming by again. You're starting to be a frequent flyer over here.
Always a pleasure to be here.
Are you, you're collecting the mugs. Is that the deal?
I've only got one, actually, but yeah, I use it.
Yeah, we're going to start up a collection if you keep coming in. I tell folks, you know, it's a good Christmas gift, right?
Like
a
little Absolutely. Stocking stuffer. It's one of my favorites, for sure.
Well, you are the St. Peter's Health Chief Medical Innovation Officer. You've been in before. You know the drill. For folks that, you know, maybe missed you when you were here before, can you give us a little bit of your background? Tell us just what it is you do out there.
You bet. So I'm a family physician, and I'm working on the administration team, obviously, as a CMIO. And it's a fun role. I work with a lot of our ancillary services and IT. We're challenged with kind of thinking outside the box, and our job is to challenge the status quo. And
So you like to nudge and push a little bit.
I do.
Yeah,
that's a good way to think about it.
So how long have you been at St. Pete's?
I officially started in this role in November of last year.
Okay.
And yeah.
And where were you at before that?
Well, I was at Blue Cross Blue Shield, and then prior to that, I was at St. Pete's. So this St. Pete's was my first job out of residency as a family physician back in 2011.
So as Chief Medical Innovation Officer, what does your day look like? I mean, day to day, what would you be doing today when you get into the office? What's happening?
Well, we plenty of meetings.
That, so very exciting.
Sure. Absolutely. But my favorite thing to do is rounding. I really do believe in connecting with people and doing that personally and having a leadership presence throughout the organization with kind of being out there.
Yeah, cool. We're talking this morning with Dr. John Griffin. He's the Chief Medical Innovation Officer. It's a mouthful. That's why I think you go with the letters, right?
Yes.
He's the CMIO out at St. Peter's Health. When we talk innovation, we talk medicine. Obviously, you're busy, right? I mean, medicine is rapidly progressing, tools, techniques, all that. I suppose a bit like computers or phones, right? You get it, and 6 months later, it's the old one, and there's something new coming out.
Well, that's very true. In healthcare, technology is rapidly evolving, undoubtedly. Medications are the technologies that we're using. Of course, there's a lot of work going on at St. Pete's to we've talked about, the last time we talked was about our OR renovation going on and the robot being installed. So yeah, you bet. It's always something new with technology. And it's interesting lately with the evolution of the way that we're looking at data and at data science and analytics and artificial intelligence, those sort of things are increasingly being incorporated into healthcare. And so just like everything else, it's a rapid acceleration of injection of technology in healthcare. And so we're seeing that from multiple angles.
Yeah, well, and one of those angles, the direction that medicine is heading right now and innovation is telehealth. Can you explain to people what that is? What is that all about?
It's essentially, in its most basic terms, you can think of telehealth as FaceTime. Well, healthcare done via FaceTime. Mm-hmm. There are interesting additional capabilities that can go along with the what we call e-visits or electronic visits. these visits can be between two providers. So we're going to talk about an instance today, telestroke. And that is between a physician at St. Peter's Health and physicians, in this case, at the University of Utah. Telehealth can also be between a provider and a patient. There's a number of what you could go right now to MD Live on your phone. Mm-hmm. And have a consultation with a physician over the internet for, you know, some basic medical needs. And so that's one use case. There's lots of use cases of telehealth, but really it's using that digital medium to connect people.
So as a doctor, I mean, is this effective? I mean, I think people look at it going, well, is that kind of like one step up from WebMD, right? I mean, I can understand why people are a little bit tentative about, I want to see the doctor. I want to be there. I want to talk to him. I want to point at that weird rash and say, what is this?
Absolutely. Some things are not appropriate for an e-visit, certainly. Having hands-on, the ability to see somebody in real time and listen to their heart and lungs and do exam, that's important in many circumstances. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of things that we can take care of through a secure audiovisual platform. And again, we are incorporating some devices that are able to, where patients are actually able to put a stethoscope on their own heart.
Oh, wow.
Or put a scope in their own ear or in their mouth. And the visualization or audio feeds coming through those devices actually are very impressive. And in some cases, better than your regular old stethoscope.
Yeah.
You just turn up the volume. It's I practiced using telemedicine in my own practice, and I was at one time doing more e-visits than face-to-face visits. Patients actually really appreciated the one thing about it is it enabled me to connect with them, especially those who needed more frequently in real time.
Sure.
So if they had a need, I was able to be there quickly at that point when they needed me.
So one of those things, it seems like if people are willing to take that first step and give it a shot, it might not be right for everybody, but very often you're going to go, you know what, that actually was kind of cool.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that, and we will just continue to see this grow. It's, yeah, you know, in Montana, things evolve at a different pace, I would say, but it's becoming mainstream healthcare in a lot of markets right now. In fact, you see plenty of headlines out there where if you are not working on your digital front door as a healthcare organization, you're kind of missing out, because that's the way that our folks in our communities, that's where they're going, and that's it's increasingly popular. So yeah. We've got to keep up.
Dr. John Griffin is our guest. He's out at St. Pete's, and we're talking telehealth. And what are the benefits? Obviously, there's benefits for the patient, right? Especially if we're talking rural. You know, it's tough to get into town. So what are the benefits for St. Peter's?
Well, this is meeting our patients where they're at and, serving their needs better. Just as you said, there are lots of patients that have to drive, 40, 50 miles more to come in for visits. And sometimes their circumstances aren't the best. And so it may be easier for us to reach them via a digital connection.
Yeah.
But the other thing is that, St. Peter's, we do strive to serve this community and have those services available that are needed by the community at St. Pete's, but we can't be all things to everybody. There are quaternary health centers and tertiary health centers that we work with, through the region. And we need to have connection to subspecialists, for instance. In this case, we're talking neurology. Our physicians can have access to some of the, most prestigious or renowned specialists in the country via telemedicine and have the ability to, get on their phone even and have a face-to-face consultation with an expert that enables them to elevate the level of care for our patients here in this community and be able to keep patients appropriately here in this community. In fact, a lot of these programs, you see that the number of people who actually have to be transferred out goes down because we're able to handle things that maybe otherwise folks wouldn't have felt as comfortable handling here. So it's kind of a cool thing. It enables us to elevate our game here in St. Peter's for our community.
Yeah, well, and you touched on it there, something that we wanted to mention before we ran out of time. One of the programs, Telestroke.
Yeah.
What is that about? Because I think that's one of those things where we think stroke, okay, 911. You know, that's, we should be calling that. We shouldn't be getting on FaceTime.
Yeah.
Right? So the initial, what are you talking about? I mean, can you explain what the program is?
Absolutely. So this is a case of telemedicine for a physician in the ER primarily or other areas of the hospital here locally to connect with expert neurologists at University of Utah. We've got an affiliation, and this is a specific relationship with Utah. And so if a patient comes in with a stroke that the ER physicians here, there are critical decision-making pathways that go into caring for somebody who comes in with a stroke. And the physicians need expert guidance on, you know, some of those critical decisions. Mm-hmm. And so having that direct connection for our physicians, it elevates their level of confidence in what they're doing. It also brings in expert advice that is sometimes needed to make the right decisions, particularly about if you've got to send somebody to a higher level of care or not. And so it's, stroke is a really key thing for all of us. You know, one of the talking points that I wanted to hit on today was just the, you know, our brains are the most sensitive to a lack of oxygen. A stroke is, you know, a blockage that leads to a lack of oxygen in your brain, and seconds and minutes matter. It's, that is brain tissue is dying with a stroke. And so every second counts. And so we want to remind the community, if there are signs of a stroke, get into the ER immediately.
Yeah.
We're making sure to put all the pieces in place for us to have the appropriate level of care to handle those cases quickly and most effectively for our community and for our patients.
Yeah, it's really cool because not only is this the telehealth capability for patients, you know, it's for you guys to say, you know what, I know a lot of stuff. I don't know it all. Let me get a hold of somebody and sort of have a confab and let's figure it out.
That's exactly right in this case for Telestroke. Yeah. So, yeah, we're doing lots of telehealth types of programs, several. And that suite of services will continue to expand.
So if people want to find out more about that, if they live out there and they are a 45, 50-minute drive and it's tough to come in, you wait, you get in the doctor's office and they go, yep, everything looks good.
Yes.
You know, and you're going, why did I take all this time? It might be right for them. How do they find out about the teleprograms?
The main channel is going to be through their physician. So, and right now we are building these programs at St. Peter's. It's a work in progress. So not all of our physicians at St. Peter's are currently doing telehealth and for their own patients. That is the next step for us on our journey with telemedicine. And so that is very soon to come for Helena.
Yeah, it's a really cool development. So if you're out there listening, thinking this might be right for you, check with your doctor and find out what we can do.
Yeah.
Doc, I appreciate you coming in.
Yeah, anytime.
Yeah, absolutely. We've been talking this morning with a friend, John Griffin from St. Peter's Health. Stick around, though. We've got more St. Pete's coming up after this. I just wanted to step away from the show for a few seconds to tell you that if you miss an episode, you can always catch up. We're on iTunes, so find our show there or swing by coffeebreak959.podbean.com. Local and area events, city, state, and national officials, your neighbors doing incredible things. We talk to them all on Coffee Break, where Helena comes to talk. Now, back to our show. Welcome back in. Thanks for sticking around. I'm Troy Shockley. This is Coffee Break, and we've got a grand finale today. We're talking St. Peter's Health, and in the studio now, St. Pete's infection preventionist, Jamie Seymour. Jamie, thanks for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thanks for the invite.
Jamie is super excited to be in this morning. She's been waiting to come in on the show. She's been begging to come on the show. We had a last minute kind of a switcheroo and she stepped in for us. So I sure appreciate that sort of last minute pinch hitting.
Absolutely. I'll do what I can.
Yeah. So I guess give us the Jamie Seymour story. What's your background? Just go ahead and talk. The mic is yours.
Well, thank you. So I am an RN. I work in the quality department at St. Peter's. I came to St. Pete's in 2005. I actually moved here from out of state as a traveler, and I stayed. I love it.
So you were a traveling nurse.
How does
that work? I mean, it seems like sort of an exciting way to work and see a lot of different places, work with a lot of different people.
You know, it really is. You get a lot of perspective. You see things done in various different ways. You learn so much, which is one of those things that I love, is to be constantly learning. So mm-hmm. Healthcare is a great fit for me.
So what is it about Helena? What is it about St. Peter's that kind of snapped you out of that and said, you know what? I don't need to travel anymore. I'm home.
And that's just it. It's home.
Yeah.
It just felt like home.
Very cool.
This is the piece of the puzzle.
I like it. So what is it that you do here? I mean, what is your job?
So the role of an infection preventionist is pretty broad. I work in collaboration with public health, but I also work in collaboration with our entire organization, all the way from administration to environmental services. We do a lot of education with our staff, families, patients, and even contractors that do work in our facility as well.
Yeah. So how did you get into this specific niche? I mean, coming in as a traveling nurse and RN, that's not what you were doing before you got here. So how did you sort of fall into that?
I honestly don't know how it fit.
It just happened.
The pieces just fell into place, and it was one of those positions that the nurse that was in it moved to a different position outside of the organization, and it just fit my personality and the way that I like to practice.
Yeah, so you're probably getting right into your busy season now, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it's not quite there, but you're definitely getting ready. The flu is about to really start, but I'm guessing we've already seen a little bit of it kicking up, right?
We've seen a couple of cases. Nothing big yet, though.
Okay. Yeah, I had a friend who, my daughter was telling me she had to take her young daughter to the hospital because she was having flu-like symptoms. And mm-hmm. We were reporting the other day that over in Gallatin County, they're saying they're seeing numbers already that are, you know, late November, early December kind of numbers. You know, half a dozen hospitalized and some verified cases. And is it going to hit a little bit early this year, does it seem like?
It very well may. You know, if we get a bad winter and we have, you know, more people inside in close proximity to each other, we may see more of a spike as well. It really just, it's hard to tell at this point.
Yeah. So, but right here in Helena, we're not seeing anything significant right now.
Knock on wood.
Right.
Yes.
I just jinxed it. You're going to be busy now this next week. So what can we do to stay healthy? I mean, is this really a back to basics sort of operation?
You know, really it is. One of the best things you can do is get your flu shot. Get your flu shot from your primary care provider. If you don't have a primary care provider, you can get it from a pharmacy. Most of the local pharmacies in town will give them. And the local health department also. We can get flu shots there. If you do get your vaccine from somewhere other than your primary care provider, it's always a good idea to have that information sent to your primary care provider, just so they have record of it.
We're talking this morning with St. Peter's Health Infection Preventionist Jamie Seymour. She's the one that knows how to keep us healthy. And so what's the one thing that people do most often that sort of results in illness? Like what's that one fatal error that we always make?
Well, you know, there's a couple. One is, you know, we don't stay home when we're sick. sometimes. So if you are sick, stay home, especially with flu-like symptoms. Fever, chills, sore throat, body aches, that sort of thing. Stay home and get better. Stay home until you have been fever-free for at least 24 hours. And by fever-free, that means without medications on board to reduce or mask that fever.
Okay. So we shouldn't come to work with, you know, in that NyQuil haze saying, no, I feel pretty good.
Yeah. That's not great.
Sorry, I've done it a few times. I have to admit, but the news goes on. Kurt needs me. When we talk flu, I suppose, and you mentioned the flu shot. Who should get the flu shot? I mean, I will tell you, Jamie. I've never gotten the flu shot.
We have to fix that.
I know. Well, needles are not my thing. We don't get along. That's a, my needle comes out, and my blood pressure jumps about 20 points. I think. But is this required or something that everybody should get? Are there certain groups of the population that it's really more, you know, imperative that they get this shot? How does that work?
Everybody should get their flu shot. So everybody 6 months and older should get their flu shot. You know, infants that are under six months, they're too young to be vaccinated. So it's important that those around them are vaccinated so that they don't spread it to them. It's especially important for, you know, our elderly or people with chronic conditions like diabetes or asthma or heart disease. It's really important that they are protected.
Yeah. We're talking this morning with Jamie Seymour. She's out at St. Peter's Health. She's an infection preventionist out there, and we should all be a preventionist. None of us want to get infected. So what are, past the shot, what are some things that we can do to just sort of keep ourselves healthy, keep the people around us healthy?
So like I said, stay home if you're sick. Respiratory etiquette. So that's, you know, cover your cough, cover your sneeze, sneeze or cough into a tissue, and then use hand hygiene after. If you think you have the flu and you're going into your doctor's office, make sure you let them know when you come into the doctor's office that you do have these symptoms so that they can maybe give you a mask. So it's really hard to tell if the patient sitting next to you in the waiting room has a compromised immune system, and we don't want to share that with them. So we want to make sure that we're doing our part to keep our community healthy. And then hand hygiene is huge. Hand washing, you know, after you use the restroom, before eating or preparing food, and after touching those high touch surfaces that we just don't think about.
Yeah.
You know, you go pump gas, or, you know, you go through the grocery and you handle in the shopping cart, those sort of things. Make sure you wash your hands.
Yeah. So hand washing really is, I mean, that almost is the most basic of basics, right? How often should we be doing that? Because like you mentioned, the gas pump, the grocery store door handles. I mean, we're touching things that everybody else is touching all day long.
Right. Right. So, you know, before you eat, make sure that you're using hand hygiene, whether it's hand sanitizer or hand washing. Either way, there are times that hand washing is preferred over hand sanitizer.
Yeah. So let's talk about that, because, I mean, people go, I put the stuff on my hands and I'm good. My wife's actually a middle school teacher, and she's got one of those like industrial size, like Absolutely. Squirt bottles of the stuff at it. And she makes those kids, they're in habit now. They know, you know, I come in Ms. Shockley's classroom. I got to put the goo on my hands. Is that always something that, you know, that we should use? Or it sounds like you said that that's not always the same as washing our hands.
Yeah. There are times that you really should be washing your hands and not using the hand sanitizer. So if your hands are visibly soiled, or you for some reason have body fluids like changing a baby's diaper or something, you want to wash your hands. Or if you have contact with somebody who has vomiting or diarrhea, you want to make sure that you're washing your hands, because there are certain viruses that hand sanitizer is not effective against. So you need to physically get those particles off your hands.
Okay. Jamie Seymour is our guest this morning. We're talking, we're talking about how to just keep yourself from getting sick. And, but it sounds like when we talk hand sanitizer, just as a general midday, I want to just make sure that I get rid of those generic germs that I might have touched on the door handle. Hand sanitizer is a pretty good thing.
It's wonderful.
Okay.
It's very effective, and it's actually recommended as routine hand decontamination.
Okay. When we talk actual hand washing, is there a way to do that right? I mean, I'm pretty sure my mom was telling me that if you didn't use hot water and soap, it didn't work. Is the temperature of the water matter? We're going to bust potentially a wives' tale here.
You know, warm water is actually probably the most effective. So not freezing cold, not screaming hot, just warm. It's more.
I was right, Mom.
Uh-oh. I might get in trouble for this.
No, you're good. You're a professional.
So, you know, warm water, apply soap. You want to rub your hands together thoroughly for at least 20 seconds. And that's, you know, getting between your fingers. Make sure you kind of pay attention to your fingernails. And people miss their thumbs a lot, I notice. And, you know, the wrists right there. Make sure that you're scrubbing those as well. And then rinse. You want to dry with a paper towel and dispose of that. And then use a clean paper towel to turn off the faucet.
Yeah. Yeah, because then we wash our hands, then we grab the door handle and leave.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right?
We just undid it.
Right. Man, this is a hard fight. You might have the toughest job at the hospital.
I don't think so, but it's definitely a great job.
Yeah. Well, you're fighting against these bugs. It's an uphill battle. I mean, if we start getting sick, at what point do we need to stay home? I mean, you talked about the importance of staying home. Is there sort of that window that, you know, I'm starting to feel sick, but I probably have today, and then I need to stay home? Or as soon as we start feeling not quite right, do we stay home?
You know, listen to your body. You're going to know if you feel like, you know, you might have a scratchy throat. What have you been doing? Or have you been exposed to somebody who's been ill? Did you get your flu shot? That sort of thing. Listen to your body. If you have a fever, definitely stay home.
Okay. And then we've got just like 30 seconds quickly left. At what point does it move past staying home, getting fluids, getting rest, and, you know what, I should maybe swing into the hospital?
You know, if you've been sick for more than 2 days, the antiviral medications for influenza aren't as effective. So if you think you have the flu, it usually hits pretty hard, pretty fast. Make sure you get into your provider. So they can start those antivirals, and they're more effective if they start them within the first 2 days.
Okay.
And not everyone is a candidate for those, but it's good to talk to your provider about that.
Great. Thanks, Jamie.
Yeah.
I'm Troy Shockley, and that's it for Coffee Break today. Be sure to check us out on iTunes. Head on over. Give us a review there. That's always much appreciated. Or swing by coffeebreak959.podbean.com. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you back here tomorrow.